hope that when we complete our work that we will all feel as though we're in a better place than we are today.
Fran Ulmer will serve on the President's Oil Spill Commission. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, the 14th of June. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, the gubernatorial race loses a candidate.
My decision to drop out of the race, though, is simply a recognition of the sort of the cold, hard facts about running for governor.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. In Alaska, more than 2,000 children are in need of foster homes, and more than 1,200 of those children are Alaska Native. These children need homes where they can learn who they are. Alaska Native foster homes can help pass on traditions, arts, and culture. Help keep Alaska's children safe and their heritage strong. Learn more at 800-478-7307. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
University of Alaska Anchorage Chancellor Fran Ulmer has been tapped by the White House to serve on the just-formed National Commission on the Deepwater Horizon Oil Spill and Offshore Drilling. She's one of seven members and the only Alaskan on the commission. Ulmer says she was taken by surprise by the appointment. She says she doesn't yet know much about how the commission will work, but she says she'll be drawing on her experience serving on the special committee for the Exxon Valdez oil spill.
There are many, many competing interests that have to be considered when an event like this happens. The perspective of local people whose livelihoods have been affected. When the Exxon Valdez happened in Alaska, many communities, many individuals had their lives changed. So to have the opportunity to see and hear and understand people here in Alaska who had their lives changed and what a difference it makes to empower them to be part of the solution moving forward. You know, Alaskans after the spill set in motion a series of prevention and response training systems that definitely gave local people a higher level of confidence that if another spill happened, that they could play a constructive role in being able to help their regions. I feel as though there's a lot that we can learn from experiences, not just here in Alaska, but frankly, other parts of the world where oil and gas development takes place. And over the next few weeks and months, I'm sure we'll be doing that.
Right. And Alaskans have pretty much, due to the Exxon Valdez spill, I think, spearheaded a lot of reforms.
I really hope that I can be a bridge between Alaskans who have had experience in both the research and the prevention and response and the impact. I hope I can be a bridge between Alaskans and the commission and the people of the Gulf. We do have a lot of expertise here at the University of Alaska and at a number of the other entities that over the years have developed to provide ongoing surveillance and analysis to better understand what happened during the Exxon Valdez. I hope that linking the people here in Alaska with that kind of expertise to decision makers will be useful in this process.
You've mentioned earlier that you still do not know the scope of the commission's work, although it's apparently going to be a six-month process. How will that impact your current job as chancellor at UAA?
I have consulted with the president of the university. I spoke with Pat Gamble before accepting this assignment to make sure that he felt comfortable that it was compatible with my responsibilities at the university and that it would be useful to the state as well as the nation. He was very supportive and felt that it was a very appropriate thing for me to do and for us to be able to contribute some Alaska experience to the effort. Because all of the members of the commission are also full-time employees someplace else, the role of the commission is viewed as a part-time service capacity, not a full-time employment. So to the best of my knowledge, all of us will be continuing in our existing capacities.
Are you ready? Are you ready to dig in?
I very much look forward to the opportunity to help in whatever way I may be able to help. And I hope that when we complete our work, that we will all feel as though we're in a better place than we are today.
Fran Ulmer was just named to the President's Commission on the Gulf Oil Spill. Democrat Bob Post's 17-month campaign to become governor came to an end today. Despite his long campaign, Post said he had not achieved enough name recognition to be able to beat either Ethan Berkowitz or Hollis French in the primary.
My decision to drop out of the race, though, is simply a recognition of the sort of the cold, hard facts about running for governor. It takes money and it takes time, and we don't have the money at this point, and we don't have enough time left. You know, all the optimism and enthusiasm in the world's not going to change that.
Poe stood in front of the camper he and his wife Terza used to take their campaign on the road around the state as he told news reporters that he's about $100,000 short of what he would need to continue the campaign. He's not making any endorsements at this time, but he's on record as saying that Democrats need to unite behind a single candidate. He pointed out that a lot has changed since he threw his hat in the ring almost a year and a half ago, and there is a whole new field of candidates now.
Every single one of them on both sides of the ticket are more qualified than the person we elected in the last gubernatorial election. Unfortunately, Alaskan voters, I think, are suffering from governor fatigue. If you think about it, you had 2.5 years of all the drama that was Sarah Palin, then the confusion from transitioning to a new administration. And when you go and talk to voters and say, hey, I'm running for governor. My name's Bob Poe, and people are really tired. They really have this governor fatigue and I think aren't engaging.
Poe is a former Commerce Commissioner and has headed the Anchorage Economic Development Corporation. He said he's likely to throw his support to the candidate who best reflects his ideas, foremost among them, state financing for a pipeline to deliver North Slope natural gas to what he calls a gas hub.
Calls are coming in, and certainly I'd love to sit down with the candidates and talk to them about my ideas. I think what I'd like to see is that they embrace some of them. Just because I thought of them doesn't make them bad.
Hollis French said he admired Poe for running and that he expected his ideas on diversifying the economy to remain an element in the campaign. Ethan Berkowitz said Poe ran a positive campaign based on ideas and, quote, I will carry many of them forward. Poe says he plans to do some home remodeling work and write a book about Alaska's future. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a stream restoration to save salmon.
These projects are really, you know, perfect win-win scenarios where we're putting people to work and we're helping the commercial fishing industry as well as the sport and subsistence fisheries.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you've been through a lot of bad things and you feel like everyone would be better off without you, suicide isn't the answer. You're not alone. You have people who love you, and there is help. Call the Alaska Care Line at 1-877-266-HELP. Call, share, and live. If you're thinking about suicide, call for help at 1-877-266-HELP. This message sponsored by the Mindy Schloss Memorial Fund and the State of Alaska.
The Fairbanks Borough Assembly has passed an ordinance aimed at improving local air quality. The new law includes punitive measures to get after people who smoke out their neighbors. The Assembly rejected a softer substitute offered by member Matt Wandt that eliminated proposed fines for wood burners who pollute. Wandt said his idea was to use other components of both proposed ordinances, like public education, to help people buy cleaner stoves, a chance to work before coming down too hard on violators.
6 months from now, 12 months from now, whatever the time frame, we can come back and say we did 100% voluntary efforts and they did not achieve what we wanted. people are still not taking advantage of the voluntary status and they're not taking advantage of the funds made available to them, then at that point, if there is a well-defined fine schedule, then I would be in support of reinstituting the fine schedule.
Want described the mayor's ordinance that later passed as too vague when it comes to how borough officials will handle smoke complaints.
It's left up to the judgment of the department. Now, I'm not questioning their ability or their judgment, but it leaves the community open to am I being treated fairly when I am either calling in a complaint or whether I am being complained about.
The Assembly is dealing with the air quality issue in response to federal fine particulate standards that areas of the Fairbanks borough regularly violate during winter cold air inversions. Research attributes much of the pollution problem to wood smoke. Mayor Luke Hopkins opposed attempts to take the teeth out of his ordinance aimed at clamping down on chronic polluters.
Without a fine structure for the shall nots in either one of the ordinances, I ask you, how do we enforce that? And I've asked you this before, and I don't have a clear answer of how we, the administration, legal, are going to enforce the pieces that are in here.
Hopkins said there have to be enforcement mechanisms to stop people from doing things like burning railroad ties. Borough Transportation Director Glenn Miller said it's essential that actions be taken now to prepare the air quality attainment plan due to the EPA by 2012. Assemblymember Nadine Winters also resisted efforts to weaken enforcement measures, saying the bottom line is human health.
You know, people talk about equal rights and freedoms and everything. What about the people's freedom to breathe good air?
The ordinance will be in effect by this fall. A river near Sitka is scheduled for restoration work next year. The Sitka River Valley was logged in the 1970s when harvesters clear-cut trees right up to the riverbanks and sometimes used stream beds as roads. The Sitka has retained a limited fish run while the valley has regrown, but the salmon are now in danger. Restoration is an old practice on the Tongass that has a new priority in the Obama administration's Department of Agriculture. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has the story.
I guess another reporter would have actually found a way to do this story from a stream, but I didn't catch up with Bob Gubernick until after he had spent 2 days on the Sitka River sizing up the situation there. Still, I don't have to see it to understand why Gubernick believes the Sitka is in trouble.
Where it is it's a fluvial fan that comes out of a confined valley. And anytime you have that situation where you go from a confined valley to an unconfined large floodplain, the river dumps its sediment and wood right there. And it's really a tough place to do business. And, you know, not recognizing those kind of landforms, which are sometimes difficult, and having harvest on there and road building, there's not the big trees anymore to buffer and essentially stabilize the form. So when that's gone, the river just goes back and forth across there like a lawnmower taking down the alder, and it becomes a problem for fish that go up there during the freshets to get out of the river because it's really honking. Once it goes down, they're trapped. And it winds up killing them, so it becomes a killing field.
Bob Gubernick is a forest engineering geologist. He works for the Tongass supervisor in the Petersburg office. In 25 years doing restoration work, he's seen a lot of Sitkos, a lot of blocked culverts, a lot of damaged waterways. The Tongass Land Management Plan was first developed in 1979. T-lump, as it is known, requires a 100-foot buffer between clear cuts and fish streams. Gubernick says prior to T-lump, foresters had a faulty understanding of timber, called large wood by biologists, and its role in stream dynamics.
They use the streams as roads in some cases. Thought was before the research was in that the wood was holding back all the sediment and creating actually fish barriers.
Gubernick says biologists have since learned that exactly the opposite is true. Large wood controls sediment and creates deep pools for young fish. The Forest Service is now in the fifth year of a restoration project on the Harris River system on Prince of Wales Island. One of those creeks, called Fubar, Gubernik says, is now fixed up beyond all recognition.
It was actually pretty amazing. After the first year of doing the work and putting the river back underneath the bridge, we had just a phenomenal run of pink salmon come up and utilize habitat that used to get in there and would kill them all.
Fubar Creek was a $1.5 million project done by a Sitka company more closely associated with road building. Andrew Tomes, the executive director of the Sitka Conservation Society, one of the Forest Service's nonprofit partners on Fubar, Stargavin, and other projects, says restoration represents a good opportunity to put industry back to work in the northern Tongass.
These projects are really, you know, perfect win-win scenarios where we're putting people to work and we're helping the commercial fishing industry as well as the sport and subsistence fisheries. The contractors here have the skills to do that. Some of them here in Sitka have become experts in going in and doing salmon habitat restoration and are just really performing well and using their skills to make the forest and make our salmon streams and make our ecosystems much better than they were after the logging activities that took place here on the Tongass.
Tomes' invoking of fish and fishing is no coincidence. Since August 2009, when U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack announced in Seattle that habitat restoration, along with clean air and water, would become new priorities for the Forest Service, salmon have emerged as a catalyst, a way to connect the new policy vision with today's economy. But whether or not salmon push restoration to center stage on the Tongass, Bob Gubernik plans to stick around. He's been at his same job more or less since 1985 with roughly a $2 million annual budget, doing what he calls small stuff and getting fish across roads. He doesn't consider restoration to be anything new.
Management's always cared about the environment and what we do. And like I said, this is just a part of the bigger program.
Major work on the Sitka River is slated to begin in 2011. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Five Southeast Alaska locations have made the list of Alaska's 10 most endangered historic properties. The Chief Kashyyyk's house in Saxman is the number one most endangered property in the state, according to the Alaska Association for Historic Preservation. Saxman's Totem Row came in at number five. The other three endangered Southeast properties are in Sitka. The Alaska Native Brotherhood Hall is ranked second. The Sage Building, which houses the Sitka Sound Science Center, is number four. And Totem Square, in front of the Pioneers' home, is ranked at number nine. Ann Polnow chairs the Sitka Historic Preservation Commission. She says being on the list is a mixed blessing. On one hand, the properties are in danger of being lost. On the other hand, being on the list can help them be saved.
There's opportunity for grant funding, and not only through the Alaska Association for Historic Preservation, but it's recognized through national agencies that, yeah, these properties need help.
Money is on the way from the state to help restore the A&B Hall. The Sage Building is on the list in part because it's still owned by Sheldon Jackson College. The college closed in 2007, and the future of its lands is uncertain. And Polnow says Totem Square, which features a large totem pole, has made the list because of a state plan to renovate the ground it sits on. Polnow says that land is considered part of the Pioneers' home grounds and is managed by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
And originally, the state was just going to take the pole down. And the Sitka Historic Preservation Commission came forward and said, you know, we can't have a pole or have a totem square without a totem pole. And this pole is part of the National Register nomination, and it is significant.
The annual Top 10 Endangered Historic Properties list also includes the Colony Project Warehouse in Palmer, Battery Magazine 402 in Dutch Harbor, and Inlet Trading Post in Homer.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. If you're looking to start or grow your own business, Alaska SourceLink can help. They're a web-based referral center for Alaskans seeking business assistance with more than 100 resource partners across the state. For more information or to access resources online, go to www.aksourcelink.com. Connecting businesses to the help they need when they need it. This message sponsored by the University of Alaska Center for Economic Development.
A large group of dignitaries, local residents, and guests from around the state celebrated the christening of the motor vessel Susitna at Alaska Ship and Dry Dock on Friday. The Susitna will serve the Matsu Borough and is the world's first ice-strengthened twin-hulled marine vessel. KRBD's Maria Dudzak reports.
The Susitna is the first of its kind in the world, and its unique design allows it to adapt for different purposes. The ship has a center cargo deck that can be raised and lowered. When the deck is raised above water, the vessel can operate at high speeds, and when lowered, can serve as a landing craft. The vessel also has ice-breaking capabilities. Some of the speakers at Friday's ceremony included Senator Lisa Murkowski, Governor Sean Parnell, and Randy Johnson, president of Alaska Ship and Dry Dock. Johnson welcomed all present and thanked those responsible for making the project possible. He says the Susitna represents a new class of vessel.
Today I stand before you in front of one of the most unique advanced ships built in our time. A ship that will demonstrate to the world science and technology capabilities that have never existed in another ship before.
Johnson says construction of the Susitna required new technologies, such as a panel press that had never been used before to fabricate the steel. Johnson says the shipyard is prepared to take on new challenges. A keel-laying ceremony for the MV Eichner II, which will serve the Ketchikan International Airport, took place just prior to the christening ceremony. Senator Lisa Murkowski acknowledged both projects.
This is really a tribute to our town and what you have created here. Not only are we christening this incredible ship, the Susitna, but also today we're laying the keel for the MV Ken Eichner II. And with these two vessels, we're really celebrating the success of this ship and dry dock.
To show the capability of the vessel to convert from shallow to deep draft, the center cargo deck was raised during the ceremony. While the hydraulic lifts hummed in the background, the Cape Fox dancers performed. Senator Murkowski then ceremonially christened the Susitna with a bottle of champagne. The ceremony concluded with Governor Parnell saying the project is very important to Alaska. He also expressed his thanks.
I got to tell you, when I arrived and saw the vessel, saw the completion of it, I couldn't be more proud of Ketchikan, Metlakatla, all the surrounding Southeast communities that contributed workers to this project.
Sea trials will be taking place in Southeast Alaska over the next few months, and then the vessel will be delivered to the Matsu Borough. In Ketchikan, I'm Maria Dudzak.
Following a unique fundraiser model pioneered in Fairbanks, two Talkeetna nonprofits found a creative way to tap into tourism dollars flowing into the community. The Denali Arts Council and the Sunshine Transit teamed up to offer tourists a real Alaska experience and make some money in the process. KTNA's Deanna Hecker has this story.
In today's economy, small local nonprofits have to be creative to stay afloat. In Talkeetna, the Denali Arts Council and the Sunshine Transit share a unique fundraising project. It is called Dinners at Home and was successfully pioneered by the Fairbanks Arts Association. The concept is that tourists are taken to local host families for a dinner to experience some local fare and conversation. Denali Arts Council Executive Director Mindy Lindgren explains.
Basically, it's a fundraiser that connects travelers coming to Talkeetna with local hosts who provide a dinner in the home. And the focus is the conversation and meeting someone locally, learning about the culture and who we are and what we do.
The Arts Council lines up host families, and the eco-tour company Alaska Wildland Adventure supplies the visitors. Talkeetna Sunshine Transit picks up the guests and delivers them to the local hosts. For that service, the Sunshine Transit gets a share of the $40 per person dinner donated to the Denali Arts Council. The Sunshine Transit is a grassroots organization associated with the Sunshine Health Center to provide daily transportation from Talkeetna along the 14-mile-long spur road to the clinic and the grocery store. At first, rides were offered for free, but now they charge a dollar per ride, which is still a bargain. Driver Mike Sterling, while driving the van along the spur road on a recent rainy day, explains what's in it for the Sunshine Transit.
You know, this is a nonprofit transit organization, and we need operations money. So from the money that they're paying the Denali Arts Council, we're taking a portion of it in order to provide the transportation. And they're getting the experience of a real Alaskan home. So rather than being herded around in the tourist industry like most people, what they're getting is they're getting some authenticity in the experience.
Sterling recently shuttled tour guides with Alaska Wildland Adventures to a Talkeetna family for a dinner of Alaskan salmon, halibut, moose, and even muskox. He describes the tour guide's reaction to the real deal of an Alaskan family with a 10-foot stuffed bear standing in their living room.
So these guides, and they're eco-tourists, right? And they're eco-tourism guides, so you could tell. At first they were taken aback, and then they thought, oh my gosh, this is as authentic as an Alaskan family gets.
Alaska Wildland Adventures Program Director Brooke Edwards said that they started their cooperation with the Denali Arts Council last year, and guests rated their local dinner and conversation as the highlight of their Alaska trip. Last year, the program raised just a little over $1,000 for the Arts Council, but demand for it is growing. In Fairbanks, dinners in homes raised up to $30,000 a year for the Fairbanks Arts Association, until in 2008 the tourism economy took a dive and the tour company the Fairbanks Arts Association was working with canceled the contract. Sterling is optimistic that dinners in homes will continue in Talkeetna and that it will help the Sunshine Transit to keep rolling.
We're pretty close to the edge of our capacity to provide transportation like this, and it's why we were looking for ways to make money. And I think it's working. I think we're going to make money, and DAC is going to make money, and it's going to work.
In Talkeetna, this is Deanna Hecker.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Ross in Fairbanks, Robert Woolsey and Ed Ronco in Sitka, Maria Dudzak in Ketchikan, and Deanna Hecker in Talkeetna. APRN's Steve Heimel reported from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. If you know an Alaskan struggling to find health insurance because of a high-risk chronic medical condition or other uninsurable reasons, encourage them to talk to a local insurance broker about the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association. ACHIA was created by the state legislature to meet the needs of Alaskans, and several plans are available. Talk to an independent insurance broker. Information also available at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the ACHIA. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. Working late? Hear Alaska News Nightly at any time of the day on the web at www.aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.